It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. I am neither Rokan nor Anna DeVellantes. I'm Brian Noonan in for Ro and Anna today, and I will be with you all next week in this time period. So thanks to Ro and Anna for allowing me to keep their seat warm while they're gone. Hey, don't forget the Top 5 at 5 is at 5:30 today because it's Friday. So we'll do the Top 5 at 5:30, but you must listen to the Top 5 at 5 for your chance to win a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply in Broadview with true outlet prices every day. Just in, come see the beautiful new mahogany and alderwood entry doors. That would be fantastic. Maybe we'll get you a nice alderwood entry door for the traffic booth, Violetta. Would you like that?
That
or are you more
wonderful.
A mahogany lady?
I like brown.
You like brown? You like brown. All right. Well, that's, I'm sure we can get either one with a nice brown stain. A nice brown finish for you. Are you keeping track? Do we have any new traffic trouble spots? I know I'm putting you on the trouble spot, but I am obsessed with the traffic today.
You know, there isn't anything specific. There's just a lot of traffic really on all the major roadways and and really all the neighborhoods around here. The Guns N' Roses concert is going on, so that's causing traffic downtown. And
yeah, listen, if you're going to Guns N' Roses, take public transportation.
Yep.
If you're going anywhere, take public transportation.
It's probably a good idea all weekend long. Metro's actually adding more cars earlier right now so that people can get out of the city, and then they're also extending most of their lines until 1 a.m. to accommodate riders who are leaving downtown this weekend.
If you drove into the city this morning, just abandon your car and take Metro back out to wherever you live. You don't want to mess with that. It's going to be, and despite Violetta saying it, there's not going to be a lot of breeze in your car as it sits there on the expressway.
All right, turn on your air conditioning and roll down the windows.
All right. No, keep the windows up because some lunatic might try to jump in. I don't know if you've heard, but violence in Chicago is at levels not seen since the 1990s. It is a horrific state of affairs here. We've got homicides have jumped 49% to 312 through Tuesday. A very interesting report in the Tribune today that will be continued throughout the summer. They are looking at the violence and the complex causes of Chicago's spiking violence. One of the guys who covers this and was an important part of the story is Jeremy Gorner. He is on the police beat for the Chicago Tribune. He joins me in the studio now. Jeremy, thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
I read this story this morning, and I'm guessing, like just about anybody else who read it, I was shocked because we hear every day about shootings and gun violence. But when you actually see the numbers, it's staggering what's happening in this city.
Right, and I think I've heard Eddie Johnson talk about this, as I did former Superintendent Gary McCarthy, that it's that drumbeat of the 24-hour news cycle when you see that there's, you know, 40, 50 people every weekend being shot. You know, that was last few years, you know, we hadn't seen numbers like that still weren't as bad as the 1990s, but here you are this year, some of these numbers are as bad as they were in the late 90s. Except back then, you didn't have Facebook or Twitter.
Right.
You do now, and people are more aware of what's going on in the South and West sides because of social media, because of the internet, and it's just compounded by the fact that, yeah, the numbers are a reality, that they are as bad as the late 1990s.
Well, when you look at, and this is it may boil things down too simply in the overall picture, but it's another shocking thing. Chicago outnumbers New York and Los Angeles combined in their shootings. And you think, you know, New York and Los Angeles, big cities, a lot of violence and gang problems. We know that. They've cut it down a little bit. But for us to double them combined, it's unbelievable.
Right. And, I mean, we did a story last year where we compared the violence between the three cities. They're three very difficult cities to compare to. I mean, the demographics, of course, are completely different there. But, you know, Chicago, I mean, it's, you know, depending on who you talk to, poverty, segregation, that's unlike any other city, big city in the country, according to many experts.
Right.
And the proliferation of handguns. I mean, we live right next to a state where it's very easy to get handguns. I mean, in New York State, a lot of the guns they recover there, I mean, they don't have an Indiana next to them. They have a Pennsylvania, New Jersey. A lot of their guns come from the South, but what a lot of the guns in the illegal guns in Chicago come from right next door. And gangbangers can get these guns through straw purchasing, where they could find people who they know who have no criminal records who can easily buy these at gun shops, or they do a lot of these train burglaries where they can get guns. It's very easy.
And that the guns is one thing, and we know Superintendent Johnson is calling for stricter gun laws. Tom Dart wants mandatory sentencing for any gun crime. The guns are something that argued about all the time. The segregation is another thing where we're saying, listen, these neighborhoods are being dumped on. You're looking, and you guys pointed out, Harrison and Englewood are the two districts that seem to have the most problem. And these are gangs, one on the west side, one on the south side. And people think, well, isn't it easy to, if we know it's the gang members, just go in? But the gang structure has changed so much, it's making it almost impossible for police to shut off a gang like they used to be when it was highly organized and there was one set head of a gang. Now the gangs are splintered. You've got, for lack of a better term, little rogue gangs that are doing things. It's really difficult.
Well, one of the shooting victims I talked to, who's from the west side for this story, this didn't make it into the story, but he grew up on the west side, and he was telling me that when he was growing up, a lot of the, he's in his 40s now, a lot of these gangs back when he was coming up would warn, you know, law-abiding citizens who could potentially be collateral jam and say, hey, everybody, get out of the way because, you know, we have to shoot so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very organized. By
right.
That. But now...
Yeah, back then, the gangs didn't want civilians getting hurt because that drew more attention to them.
Right, and this victim, of course, is more cognizant now because he's a victim to say that these kids now just don't care who's in the way.
Right.
Not to kind of, like, change the subject of gangs and guns, but I think for that story, the one thing to kind of look at what's different, I mean, poverty, segregation, I mean, that's been in Chicago for decades.
Sure, and people talking about jobs and all that, that's we hear that all the time.
Right, and don't forget that, you know, just from some experts I've talked to in law enforcement, what's different this year, obviously, is this amplified distrust between the police and the community. Right. That's kind of what I've been getting from talking to a lot of people for this story. You had the Laquan McDonald shooting that really worried a lot of officers about, I don't want to be the next viral video.
Sure.
You have a change in the state law that requires police to document their street stops more thoroughly because of concerns from the ACLU about racial profiling.
And we're hearing from police, you know, union officials and stuff, that those reports are so complicated
right.
and convoluted to fill out that it takes the officers off the street for about an hour.
Right. So there's two sides of the story to that. You have the ACLU basically has said that, you know, there's no correlation between the fewer street stops and the violence, because the street stops that used to be made under the contact card system where they used to
right.
document the street stops, a lot of those were unconstitutional stops. But a lot of police I've spoken with and the police union, they say, okay, but these forms that they have to fill out can tie an officer up for half hour, maybe even longer at times. And, you know, the longer you keep an officer off the street, the longer they're not responding to calls.
Sure.
And in neighborhoods, in districts like Englewood and districts like Harrison, I mean, the calls are just one after the other. And you could, you know, be delayed in responding to a shooting potentially. And that's hurting them a little bit.
And for as dumb as a lot of criminals are, some are smart enough to realize that, hey, the cops have to go in and fill these reports out. So we've got a window where now there's going to be less cops on the street. And the fact that, as you mentioned before, you've got cops who are worried about becoming the next viral video. So there's reports that maybe they're pulling back a little bit because they don't want to have to take the time to fill out these reports. And there's a lot of stuff going on. So the criminal element can take advantage of all of that and increase their activity.
And that's what Superintendent Eddie Johnson said, Brian, basically that these criminals are not stupid. I mean, they watch the news.
Right.
They've heard anecdotes from police reported in the media about how they don't want to be the next viral video. They don't want to end up on YouTube. They're just not going to, you know... Eddie Johnson cites confusion in how to fill out these new forms because they were so labor intensive before. And these criminals know that. They know that when they get stopped, it's like, oh, my God, you stopped me. I didn't think that you would stop me. You know, seriously. I mean, I've heard this I've heard this from police before in the last 6 months that, you know, sometimes they'll stop these criminals and the criminals will be shocked. Like, oh, my God, I didn't know you guys were doing. I mean, seriously,
I didn't know you guys did that anymore.
Right. I mean, that's to some police. I'm not saying it's across the board, but some
sure.
I've talked to, it's become that bad.
All right. So other than the big social issues, the jobs and unemployment and investment, those answers will solve some of this problem. But we all know that's down the road. That's something that doesn't happen overnight, because you're not going to get businesses to invest in a neighborhood where they think their employees are going to get killed and they're going to be robbed. They're not going to do it. You've got to, that's all long term. In the short term, if you're looking at, you know, as we've mentioned, Harrison and Englewood, those were mentioned predominantly in the article. A quarter of the homicides, right, and shootings come from those two districts.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a short of having almost a military presence in those districts and really shutting down that kind of activity, are the police, is there any answer to how we can start to curb this in the short term?
I mean, I think that common sense would dictate that that seems like a simple solution, but
I'm a simple guy.
Jimmy. Right, right. I mean, I'm not...
I want to go in there and just shut things down.
I mean, I would think, you know, if I were the police or the city, that would be too simple of a solution for a city that's really trying to be more engaging with the community. It's like all of a sudden they're sending the National Guard in there. That kind of goes against what they're trying to accomplish out there. I don't know if that's something they would go for.
What can the police do? Because we know that, and it's a legitimate problem, the lack of trust between the communities and the police department. And it's longstanding, and a lot of it, as I mentioned, for good reason. So how do we get the people in the community and the community leaders to say, all right, yes, there's been this problem with the police, but now we have to build some sort of truce, even if it's an uneasy truce, to say we're both working for a common goal of ending this gun violence, so we have to put some of that aside. Is anybody making an effort to do that?
I mean, I think every day they make an effort to do that. It's just that, you know, the police are working, you know, they have their job cut out for them, because they're working with a lot of kids in these neighborhoods who come from families that come from generations of gangs, of street gangs. I mean, that's just one thing, you know, but obviously the responsibility falls on the community itself. And it's a lot of these experts who've studied, you know, the West Side and who've worked on the West Side. I mean, there's nothing there for them. Schools, jobs. And what are you going to do when, you know, you're impoverished? Well, you're going to go to the nearest drug corner and try to do what you can.
Well, it's an ongoing problem, and we will continue to read your fine work and everybody else who's involved as the Tribune continues. You're going to do this all summer. You're going to keep this up. But if you haven't read it, go read 10 Shootings a Day, Complex Causes of Chicago's Spiking Violence. Jeremy Gorner worked on that, as well as a couple other reporters. Fine work by the Tribune. We will keep reading it.
Annie Sweeney and Pete Nikias.
All right. Good job, all three. Keep up the good work. We will talk again soon.
Thank you, Brian.